You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 21. Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm, and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. My guest on today's show is Michael Clunan. Michael's been an entrepreneur since the age of 16. He also has ADHD, but this is only something he's recently found out about. For years, he didn't understand how he could be so intense about his ventures, yet at the same time, equally distracted, depressed, and lost in his own thoughts. And he says it's like swinging on a pendulum. And the same force that was taking him up in life was also pulling him straight back down. Unaware of what was going on, he just carried on, which he says was fine until he had a breakdown and pretty much lost everything. But discovered his ADHD, began to learn more about it, and now coaches business leaders who are easily distracted. So on today's show, we're going to hear from Michael about his story and how he discovered he has ADHD, the challenges that it's brought him, but also the fabulous gifts that it brings too. So welcome to Mojo Matters, Michael.
Thank you, Jo.
Can you just start by telling us a bit of the background that led to your ADHD diagnosis? Because it kind of feels like it was this breakdown that was this catalyst, wasn't it? What happened?
Well, through my whole life, I always knew that I had, me and my family always knew I had ADHD. I was very hyper in the sense of, I wasn't hyper that I was kind of jumping off the walls like people see ADHD as the young kid in the school that bounces off the walls and stuff, doing cartwheels and somersaults all day long. But it was like it was mental hyperactivity. I was always thinking constantly about stuff. So when I started my entrepreneurial journey at a very young age, I was very creative and always bouncing from idea to idea, always jumping onto new topics and new tasks, and always in and out of stuff. So I was always diverse businesses, really. I'd go from one extreme to the next. And I'm like, so I went from like clubs to beauty salons, from beauty salons to wholesale to whatever else. So when I was around about, if I remember rightly, around between 30, 31, something hit me like a ton of bricks. Like one day I had a mad, mad moment that kind of, yeah, it was weird, really. It was just a surreal moment. I kind of really felt like I was going to pass out and I felt like I was dying. Like I was in my van on my way to work, and I had a construction company at the time. And I was on my way to work, and it's like I had to jump out of this car and do something because it was like I was going to pass out, and I just felt like it was mental. I went home because I thought, I can't go to work. I had to go home. And from this day, everything started to change for me. Like I went to the hospital and stuff, and I was on like heart monitors and bloody brain stuff, and it was surreal. For about 6 months, I couldn't understand people when they spoke to me. Like they would speak, like, and it was like they were speaking a language I'd never ever heard before. I remember one day that I kind of put my hand under a hot tap and I burnt my hand, and I went to do it again because it was like I forgot, I didn't know. And my ex-partner was with me at the time, and she was like, what are you doing? I was like, just washing my hands. She's like, you just burnt your hand. I'm like, burnt? what do you mean? Like, it was like a reset button. So during this period, I kind of lost everything. Like, I could not function. Like, I really couldn't function. And there was a day that, I'd done what I've never done before, and I asked for help. I was, I remember being in a, being on a ball in the on the floor. I just, you know, I need help. Yeah. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what it takes. Take me to the Priory. Whatever it costs, I'll pay it. I need help. I'll take all the tablets in the world. And for someone like me, one, I don't ask for help. Two, I don't like tablets because I have an addictive personality and I know it. And I was just like, please, I'll go anywhere and I'll do anything. And anyway, so this day, my partner was like, she's done what anyone does. And she rang my mum. You know, everyone, you always run to your mum when shit hits the fan. And so it was my brother's birthday. And we went to a, we went out for his birthday. And I was like, my partner was like, we're going out for his, but I was like, no, I'm not. I'll come to my mum's. Is someone going to stay indoors with me? Like, I was, I didn't like going out or nothing. In the end, they tricked me into going out. So we went to Pizza Hut. I went in my protective bubble that I used to go in when I used to go out, like, kept myself to myself. And I was sitting there, and my mum turns around. She says to me, like, oh, boy, you look really pale. And I've got, like, quite olive skin. And I was like, then I got panicky. I was like, oh, my God. Are my lips blue? Am I dying? Checking my pulse. Am I having a heart attack?
Oh, gosh.
All of this shit, right? That's how bad it was. And I looked at my son, who was around about two at the time. He was two or three. And he was sitting in front of me. And this look on his face, I'm quite a, I connect with people. Like, I can feel energy. Like, and I felt this anxious energy from my son. And I could see this anxious emotion within inside of him. And I was just like, whoa, he's anxious.
Mm.
And this woke me up. And I was like, shit, he's anxious because I'm anxious.
Yeah.
This is ruining his life. And something inside of me, because that's one of my values, is helping others and being there for others and supporting others. And it kind of hit one part of my soul, and it kind of woke up and was like, whoa, what's going on here? You're affecting the others around you and someone close to me, someone that's important. So I was like, shit, like, I turned, my brain switched back on and was like, right, you need to solve this problem. And I used to be an amazing problem solver, and I still am. I look more as a solution finder now. And I jumped on the internet. I was like, bang, I was looking at all different anxiety, depression, this, that. And I was running through all this stuff. And this is where my ADHD brain kicked in. Like, I was just digesting this information, like, rapid, like, super speed. And I was like, I got to depression. I was like, I got through it. And I was like, reading what it was, why it happens, how it affects you, et cetera, et cetera. What are the treatments? And I kind of looked at it and I was like, do you know what? I'm depressed. I've turned, because it's led to depression. Like, this is why I can't get out of this cycle. And I was like, nah, I can't do this no more. My brain, I was like, I can't do this no more. And I was like, you know what? F that. Yeah. And then and I remember my mum looking at me and she was just like, wow, your colour's come back. And I was like, see that depression? Leave that. Changed my life. And after that, I kind of went into kind of understanding myself and going into kind of development. And that's what I wanted to kind of understand, because I was trying so many things and I was thinking, why are these things not working for me? I'm doing all this self-development stuff, all of these Tony Robbins and everybody else is preaching, do this, do this, do this. And something just wasn't working for me, and I'm all about results. And I thought, it's because I'm wired differently. I've always been like that. I've always been different. People say, you're weird, you're strange, you're different, you're different. So I kind of thought, do you know what? Let me go and finally kind of understand if it's to do with this thing they call ADHD that I kind of, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I actually had three diagnoses, because I wanted to check and double check, treble check, should I say. So, and all three of them was like, yeah, you're very high on the scale. You're like 7 out of 9, 8 out of 9, 8 out of 9 on the scales. Like, you're, I was like, yeah, but I don't jump at bat. I'm not hyper, quite lazy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's what kind of led me to kind of going to finally get my kind of diagnosis, was like, why is all this stuff not working for me? I'm immense. Like, I can make things happen. That's what I do. I make things happen. And I was just, for myself, I was struggling to make anything happen and to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And it's because I learned, obviously, because my brain is actually wired differently. So all of the things I was trying wasn't suited to the way my brain's wired or the way that my brain functions.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it must be such a challenge. It must have been a relief, actually, to kind of, it puts a label on things, whether that's right or wrong. It kind of gives you some confirmation of something.
Yeah. That's I don't like labels.
Yeah.
But exactly what you said there is confirmation. It gave me the opportunity to understand, rather than running down a rabbit hole of trying to learn something I'm not really too sure about.
Yeah.
Because I get really intense on, I have to, when I want to know something, I have to know everything.
Yeah.
About it. So if I was studying the ADHD thing, like, I could have been assuming, yeah, I've got it, assuming, and I would have wanted to know everything about it.
Yeah.
And really, and I've just run down a rabbit hole for however long, many years or months. I learn things quite quickly. Irrelevantly, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What are the other challenges then? That, I mean, you've talked quite a lot about, like with your personal development, that things just didn't work for you. But I just think more broadly in society, it's very neurotypical, everything, isn't it? You know, the way like school set up, workplaces, you know, everything is geared around that, like the neurotypical. So what are the challenges? You know, if some people out there are thinking, I relate to that, what Michael's just said, what are the other challenges that ADHD might bring for somebody to look out for, maybe?
It's trying to run to how society runs. It is, as you say, the 9-to-5 is, it's hard because the ADHD brain is wired for interest rather than importance.
Right.
So we only really, and it's a case of can't rather than won't. And people look at you like you're just being lazy if you're not doing a certain thing.
Yeah.
Or you're just putting it off. And really, you're actually not. You're just kind of like, it's finding how to link your activity to an interest or link your activity to a value within inside of yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of the risk and reward like we usually do with, as you being a coach as well as myself, we kind of, neurotypicals, we're kind of all about risk and reward. What are the positives? What are the drawbacks, etc. But ADHD were like, yeah, no, I get that, but I care, but I don't care.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of linking the interest. So there's a lot of, like, having breaks, it's having creative breaks. We don't produce dopamine like neurotypicals. So we're always looking for a buzz.
Right.
That's what makes it easy for us to get addicted to stuff, because we're always chasing the buzz that we first get off of an activity.
Yeah.
And it's also a challenge if a goal, you know, we set goals and we're like, yeah, I want to earn £1 million. And it looks so far away. We don't chunk down. A lot of us are very big pictured.
Yeah.
So where we don't chunk down, the dopamine is kind of the breadcrumbs to get you to get you closer to your goal. As you start to get closer, you start to sense it. You start to release dopamine. You start to get happier each step of the journey. And you start to realize, but for someone with ADHD, we struggle with the dopamine, so we struggle with the breadcrumbs. So the goal to you might be, this is my big goal, it's like that big, but to me it's like that.
Really?
The goal's that.
Yeah.
I have to kind of chunk down and kind of have smaller goals within my goal, because I need that instant gratification to kind of get the dopamine release and the kind of good chemicals running around my body to kind of help me focus on getting to where I want to be, because there's so many shiny objects in the way.
Yeah. I mean, in one sense, that there's a similar technique that I would use with my clients, aside from, you kind of do big picture, really big goal to help you keep future focus, you know what you're working towards. But then for lots of people, then I include myself in this, it feels so overwhelming because it's so big that you don't take action. So like the key is to break it down into small steps, because every step you take produces that shot of dopamine that helps keep
100%,
motivated. Yeah. So when you're working with clients or for yourself, are you basically setting really small, like near-term goals, or do you visualize something that's big that you want?
So I kind of work with, I work with neurotypicals, I work with people with ADHD. I'm lucky enough to kind of be able and skilled and trained for both. So I do a lot of big pictured stuff because we all want to, I work with high achieving individuals and people that actually want to do big things. And people with ADHD have a lot of big ideas, and we actually want to get to a higher level in things we do, as neurotypical people do also, like entrepreneurs. And we set big goals, but we do, as you said, we just have to chunk down into smaller bite-sized chunks to make things a lot more manageable and to give us smaller things to kind of focus on.
Right. So how do you, like, sort of day-to-day, if, so one of the things in the intro and what you've been telling me about previously is you work with people who are easily distracted.
Yeah.
So, like, what does that look like, and how I don't even know what the word is. How do you undistract them? How do you keep them focused?
So I say, like, so I kind of help people go from distraction to action.
Right.
So I kind of, it's really getting an understanding of how your brain works and how your brain is wired. It's kind of working out what the missing pieces are, working out the things that work well for you, the things that don't work, because sometimes we discount the things that work because we're always chasing the next thing and we just forget, or we never take notice. It's kind of, it is, and simple processes that really, really help is kind of asking yourself certain questions in the morning and setting a focus and setting an intention to kind of ignite your RAS system to kind of really get focused on your intention that day. At the end of every evening is kind of like writing down your wins, what has worked for me.
Yeah.
And kind of see, so you're kind of journaling stuff. It's, I've found that a lot of, like, time blocking has been working for me lately and a lot of my clients. There's a variety of things, really. Like, it's not different to, of course, we all coach in different ways, but I think the first step is always to gain an understanding, to gain clarity on the situation and on the individual. And you have to work on everybody on a kind of an individual basis.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, quite a lot of those techniques I probably use with my clients, that neurotypical clients.
Or yeah, I mean, certainly.
They are. I mean, that's the thing, I think, with the more that I've got to know you over the last, like, few months and I read your content, there's so much of that I relate to, and I think,
I've got to be honest, you're not the first person that says it, and you won't be the last. My partner says to me that, why is it everybody that speaks to you has ADHD? And I'm like, please, I do not label ADHD at all. But it's because, just because of the things I talk about, and I talk, and I'm very open in how I talk and what I talk about, and I'm very open in who I am and what I struggle with and the things I've achieved. So I'm like an open book. So everybody's like, yeah, like you said, I can just so relate to that. And yeah, I'm a relatable person because I'm real. I talk about real life stuff. I'm not putting on an act. I'm kind of talking about real life, day-to-day stuff, situations that I'm encountering, situations I have encountered. I kind of take notice of the people around me and what's really going on. Yeah. I'm not kind of coming out with textbook stuff. I'm coming out with, like, real life experience.
Yeah. And how about, I mean, I know we sort of focus on the challenges that ADHD might bring to your life, but there must be an awful lot of, I would call, the gift that you have for certain things. So what are the things that, you know, and particularly, like, for workplaces that really need to start thinking more about people that are not neurotypical and what they bring to the organisation and how they can adapt their organisation and workplace to be more inclusive so that everybody benefits? What are those, like, gifts that you have?
So I find a lot of people with ADHD is, and a lot of kind of neurodiverse people are very creative because we are wired differently. We have to think of creative ways to do certain things. So we have to get really creative. We're great problem solvers, and we move into problem and solution, which is the way society's run anyway. That's the way every business is built on a problem and a solution. And that's why people with ADHD are more likely to become entrepreneurs, because we're so problem and solution focused that, right. You know, you come to me with a problem. The first thing I do, and this is a hindrance partly sometimes, like in my relationship, for example, is that my partner comes to me with something. She's just expressing herself, and she's just going, and she wants to have a nag. She wants to have a little nag. She wants to go, oh, so-and-so's driving me mad, or this one said this and that one. And first thing I want to do is go, yeah, but maybe it's because of, if you start to under, because I want to solve the situation.
Yeah.
The first thing I do, I just want to become I'm a solution finder. So I'm like, the solution to the problem is.
Yeah.
X, Y, Z. And she's like.
She just wants to offload, Michael.
Just shut your mouth. Just let me talk. And I'm like. And do you know what I mean? And then I want to start running into kind of like, the reason you're feeling angry now is because I'm just forever like, I'm forever piecing puzzles. That's how my brain works. I'm forever, it's just like a jigsaw puzzle constantly. As you talk to me and you sound certain things, I'm kind of linking information that I have and bringing it together and painting pictures.
Right.
A lot of us are very visual. We're great at expressing ourselves. We're great with kind of expressions. That's why you see a lot of actors, people like Will Smith, Jim Carrey, and that are amazing actors, some of the best actors in the world. And some of the greatest inventors in the world, you know, Albert Einstein, people like that are supposedly had ADHD. Steve Jobs, supposedly ADHD. And these are kind of innovators.
Yeah.
And again, it's because of the problem and the solution kind of part. And we're quick learners. Like we learn really, really quickly. If we're interested in something, we just have this ability to kind of withdraw the information on just a rapid speed. Like my brain's like a supercomputer at times. Like I go through courses and stuff that I'm interested in, and I'm just like, I get it. And people go, you're so knowledgeable. You know so much. How'd you learn it all? And I'm just like, interested in it. When it interests you, it becomes part of your identity. And it's that passion you have inside of you. And just like this, it becomes an identity thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've got to be honest, there's loads of kind of, there is loads of positives to it.
Yeah, loads of upsides. Yeah.
Artists, like, everything in life has a positive and a negative. It depends on what glasses you have on at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that you see the world. So
100%, yeah.
What about those people who may see their ADHD as an excuse for not being able to, you know, do something? Oh, it's my ADHD and so I'm not going to do it. What would you say to that?
That's just repetition. You're used to doing that. It's like anything. They've practiced that repeatedly. They've practiced that story. It's like anyone we have in coaching. I'm an understanding coach, but I'm very straight to the point, and I'm very straight to the point. So a lot of people come with stories, and they tell you their story of why they can't, and why this and why that, and why this has happened and why that's happened. And you're just listening. You're just like, okay, these are all the symptoms. What's the cause? And it's like, so I'm very much, okay, that's the story now. What's the truth?
Yeah.
And it's a bit of like, huh? I'm like, that's the story you've told yourself for the 6 years you've been telling the same story over and over. It's practiced. It's rehearsed.
Yeah.
I can hear it. It sounds like you're reading from a storybook. Now what's the truth? Let's kind of flip back, go back in time, and let's kind of really get to the trigger. What really triggered this kind of event and these behaviours? And it's kind of, let's rewrite the story.
Yeah.
And make it a bit more truthful.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know what I mean, the fascination and the imagination that we've thrown into it.
Yeah.
You know, 50% of the past, 50% of the past, we make up. That's a known fact. Do you know what I mean? We add bits and pieces to the story.
Yeah, and so, a memory, the story is different every time we retrieve it.
Different every time because it depends on your mood at the time and the parts that you see.
Yeah, exactly. The
story.
The environment, yeah.
So, and it is very hard. And the way I look at it is that I'm totally understanding that you've been repeating this pattern for a long period of time. But I can only offer you suggestions to kind of open your eyes a bit more and kind of see the real world and see that there is other people are totally understanding that people do suffer in a really, really bad way with ADHD because they've allowed themselves to be labelled with it. And that's one thing I dislike is the minute someone goes, oh, I can't because I'm ADHD. And there's a conversation I had with a client, and I always remember this, and I use it with people, is I had a client that kept telling me, I can't be organised because of my ADHD. I can't have structures because I'm ADHD. I can't do whatever else and whatever else because I'm ADHD. I was like, okay. So what we'd done was we had a session together, and then we put together some strategies and tools that had worked for him in the past, and we adjusted some things. And then I had like weekly sessions with the guy, and then after a few weeks, it's like, things are going amazing, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, honestly, life's, I'm a 10 out of 10. My wife loves me again. Oh, my kids, we're having the best life. Amazing. Let me ask you a question. Now you can follow the plan. You've got structure. You're able to follow the process. Do you still have ADHD? And he just like, honestly, the yeah. power of silence, it felt like an hour.
Yeah.
I was just like, that.
It'd be difficult for you.
Yeah, it's difficult for me. I just wanted to kind of like I wanted to cuddle him. And it was like, and he was just like, wow, it's the, because for so long he told his story, I can't because I'm ADHD, I can't because I'm ADHD. Yeah. And because we, everything was ADHD related. The reason I do this is because I've got ADHD. And the reason I do this is because I've got ADHD. And it was just that day when he was like, I'm 10 out of 10. And I caught him in the moment. And I was just like, so.
Yeah.
And he was just like, do you know what? You're right. I blamed everything on my ADHD. He began to understand his ADHD. And he's learned to work with his ADHD. Doesn't mean he hasn't got it, but it doesn't mean that what it stopped him from doing anything before. It wasn't, it was that he gave him an excuse.
Yeah.
It gave him an excuse to say, I can't because of, and it made him lazy. And what he done was just, he repeated a pattern over and over and over. He told a story over and over, and it became real. And it became part of his identity. He became ADHD.
Yeah.
Rather than somebody that struggles with the symptoms of that of ADHD or the traits of ADHD.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
So.
Amazing. So if there was somebody struggling right now.
Yep.
Maybe they think they ADHD. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they are or have what, you know, what advice would you give them?
I don't like to give advice. I don't think advice really works. I would say we have all at some time. One thing I will say is that memories is one of the most amazing things we have. And we can go back in a time and sort of see when certain things work for us, and we can analyze. And this is what I've done a lot of myself, is modeled my own successes and times that I was unsuccessful. And the strategies that worked for me and what didn't. And I've analyzed and really began to understand the reasons why behind it all, which has helped me develop my own strategies that work for me. Nobody's taught me strategies. I was trying to follow all the gurus and everyone. I've been around a lot of like big coaches, and I personally know a lot of some amazing coaches. And some things they were telling me just weren't working. And I beat myself up over it. Because I think, oh, mate, I paid a lot of money to some of these people. Do you know what I mean? A lot of money. I've honestly spent nearly like, well over £250,000 on my personal development journey. And I think worked. Stuff, there was some stuff that once I learned how to kind of like make it work for me, I took certain things out of it and gone, oh, I get the theory behind this now.
Yeah.
So if I adjust this little piece, and it's always, there's always that, it's kind of ask yourself questions. It's like, what is the one thing that you want to achieve? Like, what are you looking to set an intention every day? That's one powerful question, is what is the one thing I'm looking to achieve today?
Yeah.
And when you figure that, it's like, okay, so how am I going to achieve that? Who can help me achieve that today? Who do I need with me? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of asking nothing. That's the, it's ask yourself the questions. It's really take a second out. That's probably the best advice, is kind of take a second out to kind of breathe and be present and set your intention for the day. What is it I'm looking to achieve today?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that is brilliant. And it is advice. It is brilliant advice for anybody, yeah, actually.
I like to keep it simple. Otherwise, I find that I could run with so many tools, techniques and tactics that I've learned through my being an NLP master practitioner or ADHD coaching or positive psychology or bloody every other course under the sun that I've done. But you've got to do what's right for you. And only you know. Yeah. And if you look back, is, you know, what tools do I need today? What is it I need from myself that is possibly going to help me achieve what I'm looking to achieve today?
Yeah, I really love that as well, about, you know, what's going to help me and how to apply the best tool for me or adapt the tool. Because it really struck a chord what you just said earlier about you learn this stuff and you try it and then it doesn't work. And then you feel like, well, I've done it wrong, or, you know, there's something wrong with me or whatever. But actually, you know, who says all the gurus are 100% right? It is, you're right. It's absolutely about finding things that work for you, isn't it? And if that means you adapt it to your own way, if it works for you, it works for you, doesn't it?
See, we in NLP, like in my NLP, I actually done a talk yesterday, like, in regards to NLP, and I don't really do NLP coaching like anymore. Like fully focused phobias and stuff like I used to. But I done a talk yesterday and someone asked me to do a tool, technique we call the Circle of Excellence. And it's all about building states within yourself needed for certain scenarios and situations. And it reminded me, and it's kind of topical at the moment in what we're talking about, is some people, like when you're asking someone, so look inside yourself at a previous memory when you have felt confident or you have felt focused. Really see it, feel it and hear it, kind of thing, and really relive the moment. And kind of, because your thought ignites the hormones, which releases the chemicals around your body. And do you know what I mean? It goes into the thoughts and feeling cycle. But some people actually haven't got that memory because it's so lost and they dampen their emotions. So what we move into is we go, okay, well, if you can't, who do you know that oozes confidence?
Yeah.
How do they stand? What do they do? Take on their physiology. How do they stand? And this is very personal to me, that my mum, she used to smoke, and I helped her. I had a session with her and I got her smoking when I was first kind of starting at my NLP stuff. She was my guinea pig, and I helped her to stop smoking. And we was just having a conversation one day, and I was just explaining to her, because I love talking about the things I know. I'm like passionate about talking about it. And that's how I learn. I'm a verbal processor. Like, I have to speak it out with people, and that's how I begin to understand it. It's like I have to teach to learn.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her about kind of confidence, and that she was like, but I don't ever remember being confident.
Yeah.
And I was like, you must do. And I was like, you must do. Everyone's been confident. And she's like, I can't see it. And yeah, I could see it in her face, and I could feel in her physiology. She just couldn't do it. And I was like, okay, who do you know that is confident? She went, the teacher in my school, whatever her name is. I was like, okay, how does she stand? She was like, she's like, put her back straight, shoulders back, chest up. She's like, right, dominant. She's doing all this with her hands. And she's like, yeah. I said, then how does she talk? She's like, her tonality is so. She's like, so. And she's talked with her hands. And she's, yeah. I'm so excellent. I said, so imagine you're her. What do you think it feels like to be her? Oh, I bet she feels like, and she's doing all of this and she's doing all of that. And I'm like, so just imagine for a moment you're her. I'm like, just talk to me as if you're her. Explain it. Have a conversation with me that she's had with you. Relive that experience. She's relived the experience. She's kind of like telling me. She's like, yeah. And she's a totally different person. I've never seen my mom like it. She's oozing confidence. I'm like, bang, hold that thought. She's like, what? I said, hold that thought and hold that emotion. She's holding it. Yeah. I'm like, bang, anchoring it inside her. Right. So I gave her an anchor. She's like, boom. I went, bang, ignite the anchor. She's igniting the anchor. She's like, oh my God, I feel confident. I'm like, bang, bang, bang. And I'm firing at her because I'm getting passionate. This is my mum. I'm all about helping others. And if I can help the people closest to me, then bang, it's a dream. So and I'm like, and I'm firing her. We're firing off the anchor. She was like, oh my God. She's walking around like she's the boss. She's like, oh my God. She's running around. But it's just, if you can't think of it inside yourself, who do you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What does it feel like? Do you know what I mean? Who do you know? We all watch TV and go, oh, look at him. He uses his confidence. Like, he's a confident guy. Look, I see him in the newspaper. He's always confident. We know many people that we work with, and we go, that's a confident guy. Or it's saying you can see the way, you can see it in someone else. You just kind of take on their form. How do they stand? Feel it.
Yeah.
And in the talk last night, I was talking about feelings, about when you're slumped and you're down in your emotions. And if you're standing up and looking up, you can't think a sad thought when you're looking up at the sky. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Because you can't think depression. And you can't think sadness. So you go down, don't you? So you go into your feelings. You can only feel sad or feel depressed. And last night I was having people like looking up at the sky. And I was going, so look up to the sky. And I was going, now I feel sad. And they was going, but I can't. I was going, of course you can do it. And they're going, I can't. And I was like, do you know why? And they was like, do you know why? And I was like, they're like, no, I don't. I feel like I'm doing it wrong. I said, because you can't think. I said, you can't think sad and you can't think depression. You can only think of the thought. You can't think the emotion. You feel the emotion. So every time you're looking down, when you feel depressed, you slump.
Yeah.
You go like, oh, yeah, I've had a shit day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You automatically do it. But when you lift yourself up, and I was like, Adam, like, chest up, was like, bang. This, and they're like, I can't do it. And it's so funny when I'm telling people, think a sad thought and be depressed, and they're all going, I can't. And you can see them all with their chest up, shoulders back, and they're like this, I can't. And they're looking up at the sky and everyone's smiling and I'm just like, just do it. Of course you can. And we're like, I can't. And it's people on the thing and it's amazing because you just can't do it. And it's the amazing thing of this simple, smallest thing. I feel sad. Do you know what? Change your physiology. Look your up physiology, to the sky.
It is. It's massive. Changing your state and your physiology.
It releases the chemicals. It's that memorized emotion. If I stand like that, I only stand like that when I'm confident. So what is my body telling me that I'm confident? Exactly. And then what does my brain do? Oh, he's confident. So what does my brain do? It releases confident chemicals. And then what does my body do? It has the chemicals. And what does my brain do? It checks in and it goes in a big cycle of thinking and feeling.
Because mind and body are not separate things, neurologically or neurophysiologically. And this is why I love Amy Cuddy, the social psychologist, and the power posing. And that, honestly, that's what I do. If I feel...
She's amazing,
She's amazing. And it seriously works. If you're not feeling your best, if you're feeling a bit anxious about a situation, I literally stand in the Wonder Woman pose for like...
Yeah, I love that,
You get...
Yeah, I do. I'm forever like that. I'm forever just sitting up like that. And everyone's like, what are you doing?
I'm doing it now, even though this is, this will just be on record on podcast. But, to the listeners, Michael and I are both in our Wonder Woman poses right now.
Yeah, you can't really properly see it, but I'm trying.
Michael, it's been absolutely amazing to have you on the show. Where can people connect with you?
So Facebook, Instagram, it's Michael Cloonan TPC, or LinkedIn, I believe it's just Michael Cloonan. My website, www.michaelcloonan.co.uk.
Amazing.
Fabulous. No, thank you very much, Joe. It's been my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Joe Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.